Summer, fall, seasons change. We still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode. Storyline by storyline. Character by character. As we break down the making of your favorite zip code. With your host. Charles
Rosen.
Did
I say that?
Yeah. Mary Mullen.
This foolish thing about the real person. And we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests. And all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh, yeah.
Well, it is time. I saw Lisa just posted Viva Las Vegas. It is time for Viva Las Vegas because here we are on the Beverly Hills 90210 show, and our buddies Charles and Larry are in Las Vegas. How's it going, guys? Charles?
It's been wild. You know, we came up here, had no idea when we first said maybe 6 weeks ago. We looked at our calendars and realized that we were had an overlap, and that it would be this open. There are a lot of people in Vegas. And wow. May 1st, you're hearing my echo, aren't you?
I am hearing your echo. I don't know what that's all about.
What's that all about, Lair? Anyway, it's packed here. Lots
leave
of people,
studio, come back in.
Well, listen, you guys have been busy. I'm going to show you guys, as you guys work through the technical thing, I'm going to try to show you what's been happening with you two in Las Vegas.
Great.
Faithful, we are in Vegas. It is amazing here. I have to say, I haven't been in a while. I'm having a good time already. I've got my Ray Pruitt shirt. I thought maybe he was playing here, wasn't he? Anyway, hope everyone enjoys tonight's show. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. We are in a wedding chapel here, and I just want to show you, we're really excited about Brendan and Stuart's wedding, but we want to reenact one important part of it in 2021 style. This is going to be what happened actually at the end there, and here we come on to it now.
Wait! Stop the wedding! You haven't been vaccinated!
This is not the Silver Bell Chapel, but we can imagine the excitement of our characters all sitting here waiting for Brendan Stuart to get married.
I'm so excited.
And Chuck, you know, is so excited. And that is Zach. You know, Zach does not have any meth for us, even though he did play.
I didn't bring meth to the wedding.
I'm so sorry you didn't bring meth to the wedding.
Something illegal.
But something illegal.
I'm leaving.
All right, we're out of this wedding chapel before they throw us out, but the Silver Bell Chapel no longer exists, but this one will have to do.
So people, you know, all the time, they ask me, what have you done since doing 90210? And I want you to come here since we're in Vegas. You see these covers here? What, see the stools right here? Well, I come here every afternoon and I play pool blackjack. And I've never lost. Not once. In 25 years I've been coming here. And I worked so many times, I actually own the hotel now. And it's a very...
It's all right. He gets very excited when he comes to Vegas.
I'm so excited. I'm about to lose control, and I just can't take more. So I was coming down here to do this bit, right? And I knew I needed a change of clothes because I just jumped in the pool. And I had my bag. My big bag. Kara says, oh, no, you don't need a big bag. Put it in the slate bag here. And she started putting things in. And she tries to mother me many times.
Oh, no.
She didn't put the clothes in here. And I didn't put the clothes here. So now I got to walk through the casino. Big wet. How embarrassing is this? How embarrassing. This is real life, kids. If you're thinking about going into show business, it's a dangerous game.
You guys are having way too much fun in Las Vegas. That's great. Very good.
All right. Yeah, that was the very little comedy. But I couldn't get Erin to laugh. She's like, I think she's appalled.
Larry, how about you? Having a good time out in Vegas? Looks like it's a blast. Larry, hang on. I muted you. Hang on. I'm sorry.
Hey.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, yeah, we've been having a really good time. You know, it's been a good time to come to Vegas because even though Chuck says there's a lot of people here, they're really not like a lot of people like the way Vegas is.
And sure.
So it's a lot of breathing room and all the fun's here, the great food. But we want to celebrate this show, this particular show, which is so important because it was a, you know, and Chuck tells a story. I'll set him up. I'll tee him up on here because the show moved to college and the network was really worried about what that all meant. And so they needed a standalone story. And
it was important that if we were, you know, given the variable at that point that was Brenda, she was, it started in Minnesota, she'd come back. And, you know, we're going to just shoehorn her into college or give her her own story. And as we're trying to work this out, the season starts and Melrose gets better ratings than we do for the first time. And the management, the new management flips out. Mm. And they put a lot of pressure on my executive, Jonathan Littman, who became Bruckheimer's partner in all television, CSI and stuff like that. And he started to put pressure on me. And I said, no, our relationship, we've been doing this now for 3 years. I don't want to have that happen. We're going to be your number one show again very quickly. We're going to do it. Brenda's going to elope and it's going to be during sweeps in Vegas because we had just been to Vegas. Vegas is cool. And we had not worked it out yet, but this is what this arc came out of.
We had to have Brenda fall in love with somebody.
Yes.
And speaking of that person.
Fall in love with someone.
That's right.
Yes.
Boom.
And how lucky we are.
Someone.
David Gale. There is the someone. David Gale, a.k.a. Stewart. Man, it is so good to see you. How are you, man?
I'm great. Great to be here. It's the first time I heard the backstory about how this arc came about.
Well, the idea
was very important. It was really important for the
and it was a real
show.
Beverly Hills story. In fact, he's kind of based on a guy who was a year ahead of me in high school, a very wealthy family, very wealthy developer family, and there was a lot of pressure on him, and he's had a checkered life because of it. But in those early years, you know, it was that notion of being, I've got all the money, and therefore, because I have all the money, I'm going to have beautiful girls. Who's going to be on my, you know, the need to do that, always couched in, I got to please dad. And so that, I knew that was a Beverly Hills story. So
before we get into all this, I want to bring on Chelsea. She's a super fan of David Gale and of Stewart. So we always love to give our fans an opportunity to say hello and all of that. Chelsea, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys?
Very good.
Very good. It's always great. I'm so happy to see you came out of hiding.
Yes, I think that the charm of Stuart Carson brought me out.
Very good. What a good, very good.
It really was a lot of charm. Yes,
it was.
Chelsea, do you have any questions for David about Stuart? Yeah.
I just want to say, like, thank you for everything you brought to the character. I mean, I say this storyline with Brenda and Stuart is my favorite of season 4. It's just like there's these 4 episodes leading up to this, and these are the episodes I can put on if I'm like stressed or sick or whatever. And it's just, it's fun, it's romantic, it's just, I love it. And the thing is, like with the Vegas episode, she's 18, he's 24, they've known each other 3 weeks, and they're getting married. That's crazy. Yeah. But. Yeah. Every time I watch, I get swept up in the romance. I'm like, marry him. Just sucks me in. It is so good. And like, even, and because he's charming and he's romantic, but he is sincere as well with some of the things he says at the end of their first date. He's like, do you have any plans for the rest of the week? Or how about for the rest of your life? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm buying into it. And the thing, and like John Sears at the same time is talking to Kelly with similar type of stuff, but he's smarmy and he's slimy. But right. Stuart has this sweetness about him. And then you add in like the insecurities with his father and everything, which just makes him more real, more relatable, and more likable. And yeah. I just love it. But I just have to mention, there's this one thing that I think sums up the whole character for what I liked about it. When Brenda and Brandon are in the car, and Brandon's like, So are you saying this guy's all together? And Brendan's like, let me put it this way. There's been no one in my life, including Dylan McKay, who's ever known how to. And Brendan's like, how to what? She's like, how to woo. And Brendan's like, you saying Stuart gives good woo? She's like, the best.
he wooed
and he charmed, but there was a sincerity with it that,
right.
I just love it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And it was a great character. And I have a story behind that. Chuck, you were talking about how it came about, but the arc of the story. But, you know, I was working on the script with an acting coach, Howard Fine. And I remember
Howard Fine is a major acting coach, by the way, everybody.
Yeah. There was a line in there, and there were a lot of them, but I was trying to, you know, it's such a great character, because normally when I have a role and you're playing a straight character, he's not bad, he's not super good, he's just kind of even keel. It can be difficult for me. And this is how this came about, how the character clarified. I asked Howard Fine, there was a line that said, something like kisses with kisses with you are like eating potato chips. You can't have just one. And I said to Howard, I said, how can I say that? Do I throw it away? He goes, no, you don't throw it away. That's this guy. He believes every word and he means it. And you have to go with that part of the character, whatever. And that really, along with everything else, and being rich and having the problems, like you said, Chelsea, with his father and everything, that in that moment, I just went. It just made the whole character run for me, and that's how I invested so deeply in every bit of it. I found the way, and it was. Then I found all the complexities, all the difficulties. This guy, you know, this. He had a lot of things on his shoulder, a lot of emotions that he was going through, you know, a lot of things playing on him. But yeah, it was really kind of a aha moment, you know.
For sure. All right, Chelsea, we're going to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For stopping by. Yeah, that was really awesome. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Hi.
And then somebody in Las Vegas wanted to say hello to you, David. So this is Zach Sloan.
Hey, Zach.
What's up, David? It's a spelling company reunion we're having.
All right. I was watching you last night. They sent me the Vegas episode. Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Hang on.
Okay. He's so excited he has to make himself up.
I got to turn the light up. Go ahead.
And I was watching, and I was watching with my girlfriend, and I was like, I know this actor from somewhere. Like, I know him. And she's like, where? And then I looked you up, and you were on the round table, and I was on the Heights.
That's right.
And we used to hang out and go out to dinner.
Okay. And the old
we hung out like a lot in Vancouver.
Yeah. I remember the old.
And I was like, I know him.
In Kitsilano.
In Kitsilano, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a cool place. Awesome.
How have you been?
I've been great, man.
Good.
I've been
good.
Awesome. I've been in Vegas now 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We had good times back then. That was
we had great times.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, David, before we came on, you were talking about getting on this show. You weren't Stuart first. Everybody talks about you being a different character at first, right? You were the bellhop at the hotel, right? How did you get into this world of Aaron Spelling, 90210, all of this?
Okay, so I was new into LA maybe two years. I'd done maybe five guest stars, you know, Doogie Howser and a couple others. And I had this audition for this show, 90210. And I read for the casting director, went in to meet the producers in the Spelling Entertainment building in the theater room, whatever, in the theater. And I was reading for a character that was the first time I met Aaron and everyone, and it was for a recurring role or possibly more. And I started to read, and I could tell you know, I just wasn't doing that well. And so afterwards, my agent called and said, you know, I think it was, might have been Harry Gold. And he said,
Harry. Yeah. Harry's our friend. Yes.
Yeah. And he said, no, nah, you know, here, let me tell you what happened. I go, okay. He goes, you didn't get it. Okay. But, you know, but they liked you a lot. And I'm like, okay. So they're going to give you a smaller role. They said you were green and that they'd like you to go to acting classes. And I said, you know, specific acting classes. That's how I got hooked up with Howard Fine. Or I think Harry did it. But anyway, the point is that I went in for one role. I got this bellhop. And so it was just a small, you know, arc. But it was, or whatever, a couple scenes. And, yeah, but that started the relationship with Aaron. That was, you know, I did four shows with him, three series regulars. And you know, when I came back, it was such a shock. I was asking, how can I possibly come back? I mean, I'm, you know, they have close-ups on me and everything. I mean, how could I possibly come back? But it worked. I mean, you know, it was a totally
you're too good to waste.
You know that song wasn't me. It's kind of like that. You
we did that also with Gordon Curry. Was it Gordon Curry? The played Cousin Bob. Played a dope dealer in season 6.
I'm curious for you, Charles, though. Does that come up in your world like, he was the bellhop. We can't have or does it not matter?
Well, it didn't matter so much on 90210, you know, just because look at when we played Isn't It Romantic, and we played that guy who played the father in that scene. I needed a father. There was no way at that point we were in a position to get an actor with the magnitude of Josh Taylor.
Right.
So, you know, we didn't, the part was almost a nothing. And I think that, and now because I do these podcasts, I've learned that actually Kelly Taylor had a father.
Right.
We had fathers coming in and out all the time, you know, or, you know, this. So it just wasn't something that, I guess it was still a holdover in some ways of being in the Spelling Company, you know, back to the era of the 70s, maybe when television just what the people didn't take it quite as seriously. Certainly, even and at that point, when here we were in the 90s, and our audience takes our show seriously. Nonetheless, in general, I think people are much more serious about stuff now in the artistry of television. You know, as I've said, you know, one of the challenges of doing the show was that the three leads all wanted to be movie stars. Mm-hmm. And that today, I don't think you see it in the same way because you can, now everything's so blended, you can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah. Right. I don't think David, or I think the part of Stewart, as I remember, Aaron just told us they wanted us to look at this guy. I think, there was really an open casting on the part.
It was not an open casting.
Yeah. I mean, which was really cool. And then to see you on the screen, and there was real good chemistry right away between you and I think the first director you had was Jim Meckhouse, actually, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so you get delivered as the blind date of the sun. And then there's really good chemistry. What was it like working with Shannon?
Oh, Shannon was great. I mean, you know, in the beginning when I came on the show, it was you know, they were already rolling. They were already in their own groove and everything, and so it was, but I was quiet, I was patient. Shannon, I don't know, she was very nice, but we didn't talk a whole lot, so we kind of just jumped into these scenes that were pretty heavy, and I didn't really have much conversation with her in the beginning. But after a couple of, you know, I think maybe an episode or two, we got along great, and we had a really good relationship. We talked about the scenes, we worked on them, and it was fun.
Yeah. It looks, I mean, it looks great. I mean, it looks like, you know, it's a good relationship. I mean, looking at it now, she seems really happy and in love.
The chemistry.
And you know, we examined all the kisses a lot here, and I thought the kissing looked really good. You were in bed with her in the beginning of the Vegas show, right? I mean, yeah. It just starts off with them in bed.
And she and Aaron maybe can count the number of times. We didn't show in those seasons, the first five. We did many of our characters under the sheets.
Correct.
You know, right. Maybe that Tiffany once and Brenda a couple of times, and that was about it.
Yeah, it's very grown up.
We had a really good time together. I enjoyed working with her and talking with her. Actually,
did you have a kissing question, Larry?
No. I think we covered it. No, like I said, it was all working
the
there.
Larry always asks, "How was the kiss?"
Don't put any.
Kiss was fantastic, actually.
She give you rules before you kissed? Was there that's okay. That's great. I mean, so she just went for it.
No rules.
I love it.
It was exciting.
Because during this thing, and Chuck, did it happen before we actually shot this episode or after that she actually eloped herself? I think it was after we shot this episode, right? Right after she eloped?
Shannon, you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about Shannon.
It was right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember to be truthful.
You could have married her.
Yes.
Probably.
No, it was life imitating art. Yes. We had already.
It was really life. And I mean, it was amazing that it happened. She had such a good time with you. She decided to try it up with somebody else.
We didn't put her in a bathrobe. She was married in a bathrobe.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
No, you maybe not.
David, I didn't know that. So you meet Aaron, you start doing some stuff how did you get back onto 90210?
I just got the call I don't remember exactly. I just got the call from my agent. I think at that time it was Innovative, and they called and said, you know, yeah, they want you back at 90210. And I said, well, what for? And they said there's a role. I said, as the bellhop? They go, no, a different role altogether. We'll send you the script. And I was kind of shocked. And yeah, and somewhere in there also, Charles, Chuck, right? I can call you.
Yeah, Chuck. I'm a friend's calling. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Chuck, exactly. I always called you Chuck. So, you know, you wrote something that really helped me in my career, I think. You wrote something for the LA Times and the Calendar in like...
Well, I didn't write it. I actually just took the phone call and talked to
you.
You remember it. It was really nice. It was unbelievable. You were very nice to me, and I wanted to thank you for that. But that was wonderful. I remember
just read it there. You know, it was just... You know, they paid me, I'd say anything. You know,
I paid you. You don't remember the album? You didn't get it?
Chelsea's a big critic. You know, Chelsea really was on earlier. She really is very critical of the show. So the fact that she really loves you means a lot.
But Aaron,
I was going to say, what is
Aaron, you were saying you shared that article with me earlier. Do you want to tell everybody what Chuck actually said in the article about David? Do you remember?
I need to pull that up, but
yeah, I'll say real quick while she's doing that. You know, what the real funny moment was when they called me back after we had had this, marriage, it was open ended. It was left open. When I got the phone call that they wanted me back, and they actually called me. I don't think it was Aaron, but someone talked to me about it, said, look, I think it might have been Aaron, actually, we talked. He said, look, we've got to get the audience to let go of you. We've got to bring you back, and you're going to go on this camping trip. She locks the keys in the car, and
this is so fucking fascinating to me. I can't tell you, David. He would pick up the phone. This is a man. I said, Aaron, you know, why don't you put your name on as an executive producer? You're on this now. The union. We don't have a union, and it's not a non-union show anymore. If you would, so he's telling you what we, you know, doing. By the way, I was going to tell you that part of the keys, losing the keys in this, is. Was my life, and Larry knows with this because he knows I leave things. It was my life, and I had my meltdown in front of Karen, and we had been dating like 2 months, 6 weeks.
Oh yeah, exactly. I think this was an earthquake show too. I think this was
we were in a fantasy land, and then all of a sudden I freak out because I lose the D's. This scene really matters. And for him to say what we're doing, he'd read the script, and then all of a sudden, I guess we were all aware, but, you know, to...
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Anyway, that's an aside.
You well, I, but anyway.
I think he was... It sounded like he wanted to convey to me, like, look, don't be likable. Don't be charming. Don't be anything. You really, you know, I felt like it was something like that that he was trying to make sure that
That's true. Aaron would get nervous, and he would want to make the key word you put there with the clause, make sure. He had to make sure that you understood what our intentions were, because he wouldn't be in the room for the tone meeting. And, and we've talked about tone meeting. Every TV show has a tone meeting, and a decent showrunner will be at that tone meeting. Basically, it's with between the director in front of the producer. And really, the bigger shows have to have this, because you never be by that way. You the writer and the writers were always invited, you know, to get up all the nuance of the script, everything that possibly we could want. We're telling the director, because it's unfair for it. As Zach and you both know, David, it's unfair for the when a producer comes on the set, oftentimes it'll undermine the relationship between the actor and the director. And that was pointed out to me, and I never really went back to the set very much, because it was a way to circumvent authority sometimes. But
you know, looking back at that, there's something interesting, because you were so damn likable, we had to make sure that you were unlikable so we could release her from you, you know? Otherwise,
yeah, I don't remember ever hearing that, Larry.
I don't either, but we did.
That's reacting to most, because that was, you know, the thinking was, you're not, you know... The thinking was we knew that you weren't going to be marrying her, and it didn't, whatever we would do with Brenda after this wouldn't matter to us, or I think our audience, as long as what we did with her seemed plausible.
Right.
I got it. You know, I got to tell you,
it was always the key.
Go ahead, David.
It was absolutely, it was so much fun. Again, the character gave so much, there was so much to play there. You know, from the locking the keys into the car and then blaming it on her to my dad, and then her.
Well, I was never that bad, you know. No, I just used mine as inspiration.
Sure, right.
You know, it was David's daughter.
Yeah. My memory of this show is this show happened when the Northridge quake happened. That was the other thing. We were luckily filming away from the studio when the quake happened.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
we just happened to be lucky. Aaron, what was the thing that did you pull that up?
It's from the LA Times, October 12th, 1993. He's very talented, very intelligent, and he's a good looking guy, said executive producer Charles Rosen. You put that combination together, and it works really well for the intimacy of television. And then he adds, David didn't get cast because he's a handsome guy. He got cast because he's a terrific actor.
Really awesome stuff. Yeah.
All true. I also,
that's good ink.
Yeah. But when I'm talking about the intimacy of television, you know, it really is, and not the television of today, because the television today blends with movies, as we were just saying, and you get scope. But in those years, it was a medium close. That's what it was. You didn't need to have the sweep in this. It was nice to have it, but the real moments were medium close. You know,
TVs were small. TVs were very small. Yeah, they were not. You know, 30-inch TV was giant.
Yeah.
Now, David, before we were talking earlier, you told me a Luke Perry story from when you were the bellhop, right? That I think the fans would really enjoy you sharing.
Yeah, and we're going to do that episode at one of these days. That's also a kind of a seminal transitional episode in
90210
for so many reasons. But basically, our relationship with the network changed immediately after the Palm Springs show. So we'll talk about that.
Sure.
On the line.
Yeah, great. I was telling Peter, the first time I went on set for 90210. I was walking into a big room with another. It was a set just next to the where they were shooting, and everyone was in their director chairs, and it was like an island of director chairs. And I was walking towards it, and I was like, "Oh boy, You know, I was like, I forget the analogy I said to you, Peter. It was a little ominous. I was a little like, okay, what do I do? You know, and this guy stands up like on his chair and goes, "Are you David Gale?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm David Gale." He goes, "Welcome to the show, man." And he goes, "And you know, this is," and he started introducing me to everyone. And that was Luke. And we stayed friends for
the show's ambassador for the inner workings.
Oh, that's
of the show.
Wonderful to hear. Yeah,
it was great. And immediately I was like, okay, all right,
you're good. Yeah.
Well, that was a fun, you know, it was a fun episode, and I know he was feeling good, and he was feeling good about himself and the show and all of that then. So it's great that he shared that.
Yeah, it really helped a lot. I just felt like, wow. It was like I admired him in that moment. You know, immediately I just went, now that's a guy who handles himself right, you know, who welcomed me. And I did that later on in shows that I had when guest stars would come on. I remembered what he did, and I found a way to invite those people on, you know, and introduce myself or whatever. Yeah.
Charles, talk to me about writing some of these scenes and bringing Stuart in and, you know, what that process was like. I have a couple of scenes we can share, but do you want to talk a little bit about writing some of this?
In this particular episode?
Or the Stuart character, I think, generally.
No, let's look at the scenes. I'd rather, you know, riff off that, to tell you the truth, rather than make a blanket statement coming into it.
I got to write one, which I did.
You remember that all the actors, all the characters, is we're focusing on the characters, not the actors. So it's utilitarian.
Right.
He's doing this and this. It isn't. It isn't that much of self-consciousness of it. I need to move it here. I've got to put this. This is the story here. We're just filling the gaps. It stays a little more abstract. Well, not abstract. It stays a little more impersonal.
Mm. Larry, what were you saying?
No, I remember. It wasn't one of the episodes I saw, but I remember writing this episode where Brenda visits Stuart the Carson Mansion.
Oh, you know, yeah,
that was. And the they sneak fun. Away from the kids, and they're
pinball,
and they get it on a bit in the house. I remember that I just really enjoyed
playing pinball.
I just remember that.
That's right.
And I forget which episodes that's from because it was really cool.
And pinball was an important thing to the spelling karma because Candy had given Aaron a personalized pinball for his birthday, and it like. You'd hit a bumper and it would be the voices of Charlie's Angels and this and this. It was very, very clever. So pinball was in the fabric of our.
But David,
they sneak away. Yeah,
we were talking about your relationship with Aaron, and you had a couple of fun Aaron spelling stories. You want to share a couple of those before I show these clips?
I'm more interested in the Duke Vincent stories, actually.
You want to hear this?
Duke was not our buddy, a little bit more in that regard.
Oh, for the Duke Vincent story that you have.
I mean, Aaron was very, very kind and very, you know, he would say it like it is to me. You know, he would pull me outside the room. He told my dad one time, he said, your son's going to love Atlanta, Georgia. And so I was nervous. I came out of the producer audition and my dad, you know, he's kind of a country guy. And he goes, "You got it, son." And I said, Dad, you don't know. You have no idea. He goes, "No, you got it." And I was like, "Dad," he goes, "You don't know what he said to me." I go, What did he say to you?" And he says, "Your son's going to love Atlanta, Georgia, where we shot Savannah." So anyway, that's that. E. Duke Vincent one time came on that set of Savannah. And at the time, I didn't realize that, you know, when you're shooting the shows, after the scenes, it's all that camera's on for a few seconds.
No afterward. Boy.
And, you know this.
Life lessons learned by the actor.
We were in Buckhead at a steakhouse. Duke had come to visit the show because Aaron didn't fly, obviously, you know that. And we were at this restaurant, and I went to the restroom, and I was washing my hands or something, and I turned around, the door, bam, comes in, and he goes, "Hey," I turned to him, and he literally does his elbow up, and runs me to the wall, and I'm on my feet. I'm off my feet, on my tippy toes. And I'm like, "What?" He goes, you're just like me. And I said, what did, I was like shocked. He goes, you're a cocky son of a bitch. And I said, he goes, but I like you. And then he let me down. I was like, I didn't know if that was a warning or what.
There's a lot of alcohol involved, I think.
That's all I'm thinking. You're just like, I was going to ask you, how much did you have to drink, David, if you want to be just like Duke?
I don't know. But here's another story. On the same show, I was we were in the second season. We had shot, I think, 12, and then we went, we were shooting, I forget how it went. But anyway, yeah, we shot 12, and we came back for one. We shot, it was a mid-season replacement, and then we came back for another season. Anyway, Robin Lively and I were dating, and we had gone to New York, and it was winter, and it was the time of that big storm up there, the huge storm in Manhattan to shut everything down. I think it was, I don't know when, 96, 97 or something. And we were in a hotel and we were trying to get flights out because we had to shoot, like, I think it was Saturday and we had to shoot on Monday. So we were trying to get flights out on Sunday we hadn't been able to get any flights. So I made a call to my agent and they made a call to the set, to Spelling and said, look, David, Robin aren't going to be able to make the show on here whenever we had to shoot because they can't fly out. Man, that was crazy. And there were no commercial flights. So we got a call from Duke. He's like, oh, no, we got a call from my agent and said, look, Spelling called us, and Timmy, and they said, Duke is working on getting you out of there. He knows someone. He says he could even fly or this that, and the other, and they're gonna try it. So we get this call that we need to go to Jersey to some airport, and that's possibly where we're gonna go, and that we're going to, you know,
fly in a storm
when no one else in their right mind would fly. We're supposed to be on the plane, and I swear to you. And I thought about it. I said, okay, I'm a servant, I'm like, sure, okay. And I remember hanging up, and I told Robin, and I thought about it for a second. I called my, I go, no, man, no, we're not flying out in this blizzard, snow. So I was terrified. he was like, he was adamant. You're gonna make it. We're gonna get you here. No problem. I used to fly planes in the war or something. I don't know what he did. But
it was Blue Angel.
Yeah,
but Larry, so, you have your own.
Yeah, because I did fly in the storm with him. It was terrifying, but we survived. Oh, but yes, oh yeah, I'm coming out of Cabo, but going back to LA. I got to talk to John Pere about that. He's the only one around who can still verify that story. yeah, smart move, man. That was good.
He was it was Duke, so I was almost like, I know he's a man of action. I was like, this might be. This either I die or it's very cool.
I think you had one other Aaron story about running into him at a casino, right? That you
were. I was in Vegas. I was with my ex-girlfriend at the time. We were there at the Hard Rock Hotel, and we're at the bar, not in the casino part, but around in the restaurant area at the bar, having a drink. And someone came up behind me, and it was someone from Spelling, I can't remember who it was, and she said, hey. I said, oh, hey, how are you? And we were talking, and I said, oh, man, I love Aaron. He's great. He goes, well, you should say hi. I go, I will. I when I get back to LA. She goes, no, he's right over there. I turn around. There's a table of, like, I don't know, 20 producers, people from Spelling Entertainment. I imagine maybe you guys were there. Might have been somebody, one or two of you were there. And I turned around, and it was everyone that I knew from Spelling Entertainment. There's a lot of people. He gets up from the other side of the table, walks around, and, he's kind of a small guy, and he's shorter than me, and he leaned up, he pulled my head down, and he kissed me four times, one on each, here. And it was, he was always.
Well, that's like the difference between Aaron and Duke. He'll kiss you here, and Duke will just push you against the wall. Styles. That's what made them work so well.
Like a mom and dad.
Yeah. It's like, but he said something to you in that conversation, right? He was gonna.
Make your stars.
Yeah, he said,
"Oh, lover."
That was a different time. I forget exactly where it was. It might have been there actually. He had said to me, he goes, "Look, oh, it was when one of the shows got canceled. I think it was either Roundtable or when I left Robin's Hoods. When Robin's Hoods, you know, he did that.
You did Robin's Hoods?
Yeah, I was. That was that whole
yeah. thing about the Spelling wanted to have his own network.
I was going
to
say it was an independent network.
Get his own network
show, yeah.
And I think it helped to kill the man. I really do. I mean, because it just didn't catch on.
He tried to pre-sell everything.
There were so many hour shows, and his development executives, while I like them, you know, I had nothing to do with them. They weren't the premier development executives, and there wasn't really enough money to make the shows be any different than what was going on in network. And it was a hard gig for all the people who did Robin's Hoods. There was about three others, right?
Yeah, it was three other people.
Roundtable maybe was one of them.
And Linda.
No, Roundtable was NBC.
Oh, well, Roundtable was Fox.
That was real.
He pre-sold, I think, 22 episodes.
Yeah, he pre-sold everything.
The world and
then when you pre-sell it, you got to make it. And it was very stressful. Aaron, you've heard me talk about that in, you know, season four, season five, we were much more removed. That's why I'm reacting a little bit to, you know, you'd be talking about the Keys, because he had so many other obligations. We at least were a machine. We ran.
Right.
Knew what we were doing, but you know, at that point.
But anyway, he
said to me, he goes, you know, the show Robin's Hood, I think it was Robin's Hood, it was canceled, and he said, "Listen, you know, I love you. You're great. Don't worry, we're gonna find something else for you. I'm gonna put you in everything I can. You're gonna be. I'm gonna make you a star." And I can't tell you, to hear that as an actor in Hollywood, you know, coming, it's funny because it's bigger now than it was then. It was so big that I couldn't even digest it. I didn't realize, you know. But it felt good. I mean, it was amazing. But he was really sweet to me. You know?
Very
cool.
Nice. All right, here's some stuff of you.
It's a beautiful couple. Come on. It would make me very proud if you let me make the announcement.
No, oh, Mother, please.
Oh, absolutely. Mother. Oh, Linda. Linda. Come on. Linda. Jim, do something. Stop the music. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the happiest moments of my life. Not only because we're celebrating my son and daughter-in-law's 20 years of blissful matrimony, but because tonight I have the honor of announcing the engagement of my granddaughter, Brenda Walsh, to Mr. Stuart Carson.
What? Look at me, bro.
Matthew Peretta there, yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so great. Mark Damon Espinosa is in that episode too. He is the bartender.
He's the bartender, Jesse, the bartender, yes.
But the way this whole engagement goes down is amazing. And this party, this 20-year anniversary party, has got a lot of – we should cover that episode at some point too, because there's so many moving things happening in there.
Okay.
But I want to ask you about the way, you know, Jim Walsh's mother – I think we talked about that. I don't think we talked about it here before we came on. I think we were talking about that. But she gets all wrapped up into this engagement and whatnot. Do you guys remember sort of putting –
absolutely. Absolutely. And particularly the part – when she keeps saying, "I have an announcement to make, I have an announcement to make." My Uncle Lou, who my daughter Lindsay's named after, was having a 75th birthday at my parents' house up in Truesdale in Beverly Hills. And there was a party and a lot of tables out in this. And certain family members were there and certain weren't. And my mother, who was a really sweet woman and a gracious host, kept saying, "Hello, everybody. We have an announcement to make. It's someone's birthday." And this, and my older sister could tell that Karen and I were gaga. We're not that dissimilar from Stuart and Brenda, for God's sakes. And every time she'd say there's an announcement, my late sister Barbara would just like just turn to us. Is it going to be about them? And we kept realizing this. And then my brother-in-law Jerry would do the same thing, you know. And so I got inspired. So maybe about 90 minutes later, when we were together, I asked her to marry me. So it did happen. Wow. So that did come out of something. So that is the relation that I have.
That's great. I got to tell you that moment was another moment that was difficult. Again, it was with Howard Fine, and we were working on it. And when I get up on the stage and announce the engagement, and he says, "You're not capturing the size of the event." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Let me break it down for you. You're interrupting this other thing to say that you're getting married, and you don't even know the time span of your relationship." And he just he encapsulated everything and said, "The size of the event is enormous, David. You have to really go for this." And that was a brilliant piece of writing. I mean, for me to it was something to sink my teeth into.
You know? And you say you're 24. Your character is 24. I was 24 when I met Karen. I was married by 25, but 24 was the age. And she wasn't 18. She was all of 20.
That hey, was you a, want to shout out Molly Campbell. Ago. Molly Campbell.
That sounds very suspicious.
Molly.
Say hi to Molly, hi, who's Molly. Watching along with us. All right, and then look what happens.
Hello, somehow I thought tonight might be a good time to give you this.
Stuart.
I know this may seem fast, but I want to marry you, Brenda.
I don't know what to say.
Brenda. Will you marry me?
We've only known each other for 2 weeks.
Will you marry me?
What the fuck? Why not?
Yes.
What the hell? Oh, yeah. I didn't even remember saying it twice, which was
kind of cool that way.
Get the answer.
Yeah. What do you remember about shooting some of that with Shannon?
I remember that. No, at that point we were really good together on set and in between scenes and stuff, and we didn't talk much at all about the scene or the characters. We just let it happen, and it was really good that way because it was fresh. It wasn't contrived. We weren't playing ideas. We were playing more. Reacting off one another, and it was good because especially at that time I had a tendency to really want to lock it down in my head, you know, and it forced mm-hmm. me to just like go with it, you know, let's just do this. And as I'm watching it, you know, even that analytical part of my brain is like, whoa, God. It's funny, but I'm thinking I could have said the second line differently, you know, with more emphasis. And that's not right. It's good the way it is. It is
really
same delivery, and it's just the same question, girl. Do you want to marry me?
Yeah.
You know? You know what's amazing too is that, you know, because as we started spinning the storyline, you think that you're going to become we have to make you the bad guy, and all are going to hate you, all the friends, you know. But everyone can't hate you because you win them over. You're so genuine in a way. And mm-hmm. and even the Dylan thing, which we put in a pretty good plot there, where Dylan knew you from the club days, where you obviously you were a rich kid who kind of went overboard a little bit, but the fact you cleaned up just like he did, so you really couldn't really fault you for that. I mean, everyone kind of works in and they like you.
Well, also the fun part of this writing this particular episode was the ploy, you know, the subtle, you know, psychological. Suggestions that, you know, well, of course you're going to be doing this and you won't be doing creating the culture of doubt in your head that the friends did.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cool, it works pretty well. And we do get to go to a strip club, which
Well, I want to talk about that. But another thing that you guys do with this is there's the whole thing I saw in one of the episodes. I forget which one leading to this it was, but the whole prenup. Brenda has to sign.
Oh, yeah. That's the one before. Otherwise engaged.
Otherwise engaged. Where was – how did we put this in there? This is right out of it, right out of
prenup. Beverly Hills.
What's the name
Beverly
of the Hills. Show, Pete?
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, Lee Marvin and Michelle Travolta, that was all alimony. LA. You know, the palimony stuff. And you had to get it locked down. And today I know, you know, a few couples who part of the loving marriages that they have is, you know, had a prenup in it because of the values of the state. So, you know, I always think it brings kind of a, you know, a little bit a damper, but it really doesn't, because, you know, it's not something you have to focus on.
Right.
It's good for an episode. It's good for an episode.
Oh, it was great.
And then she signs it. The love between them really seems real. And then the next episode, they're in Vegas. You know, we have that whole thing, too, with the parents come to the Walsh house to discuss the wedding, which is great. Great scene. Great Beverly Hills scene. And Cindy Walsh is – Carol Potter is wonderful as Cindy Walsh in this.
Well, here's
totally getting bulldozed over.
This isn't that, but this is the
nerve of those people. Barging in here, railroading their overinflated plans down our throats, and then saying they want us involved in every decision.
I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Carson's my biggest client. Couldn't exactly tell him we don't want him in our family.
Will you tell me one thing? Why are they so eager to marry off their son?
You know what I think? I think this is just an excuse for Vivian to throw another party.
So, how'd it go?
No, it's some good stuff all through.
Oh, they're all great. Jason, I think, directed this episode in Vegas.
Yes, he did.
David, do you remember getting David? I'm sorry, Jason as a director?
Yeah, I do. I was. I didn't know that was happening until, you know, the show. I was on this. I got the script, but yeah, it was interesting. I said to myself, you know, you should. I wanted to direct, and you should give that a shot. And I was actually talking to Spelling about ghosting or shadowing a director before I left the last show with him. So, but anyway, yeah, Jason was great. He was good. I was watching him. You know, I was like, okay, this is a guy I know. He's an actor. He's directing now. Let's see how he handles it. And he seemed confident, and he was.
Well, this was only his second show.
Mm-hmm. That he directed, yeah.
Yeah.
Charles, we've talked about this a couple of times on Patreon and on the news last week, but you have a Tom Jones, Jason Priestley story, in case the people missed that and those other places.
Yeah. That's the one thing, you know, that music mattered a lot to Jay in this. So the moment that we said you're going to do the eloping series is, I know how we're going to start it. You're going to have all the shots of Vegas, and it's going to be Tom Jones going, it's not unusual to be alone. and he kept going like this, because it's Vegas. It's Vegas. And Luke and Jay had met Tom Jones. And so they hung out with him. And I think, you know, talked about, you know, what it is to have to make the young girls go wild, or in Tom's case, the middle-aged women go wild, and so it was very important to Jay to have that be the rhythm of it, and he, you know, took charge of that. And then the one other thing was that he just, this was written by a terrific writer producer that we had in seasons 4 and 5, Richard Gollance, and I think it was the second one he did, Larry, and Richard was gay. And so Richard wanted the music to be like Whitney going, and I will always love you. The funny part was going on. And Jason kept going, please don't use that song, Chuck. Please don't buy that song. Don't let him do it. Don't let him have it.
Erin, do you have any questions here for David or about this episode? Anything you want to shout out and point out?
I really love the casting of Stewart's parents. And I love seeing Peter Mark Richmond, who I remember is Christie's dad, Reverend Snow on Three's Company. What was he like to work with?
What was he like to work with? This, which he asked.
Oh, he was. I felt like I really felt like he was my dad when I was in those things. He was so good and so natural and so he had such an air about him. I mean, he was just like a just a really, really connected guy. And we, he played that role, and there was no other way for me to play it. I mean, in terms of, he affected me with everything he did. When he put me down, when he said something, it was so good that it actually, I felt it, you know what I mean? And I was like, I never even, it was easy to be on set with, to be in a scene with him. I didn't even, I just came in with my guy and my character, and it was, I actually felt like he was my dad. I mean, I felt, I bought it. The moment I saw him, I was just in, and it was easy. And that was him doing that. That wasn't me preparing the role. It was his way that he came at that character and the way he dealt with me. It was so decisive, so clear, so easy that it seemed like it was real, and it had always been that way, you know. And it made it helped with everything that I had worked on. It made it you know, kind of gel, you know.
Yeah, here's some more here. Let's see.
Surprise!
How did you guys all know I was here?
What do you think?
Oh, you've got the biggest mouth.
I just thought you'd want all your friends to see you cross the threshold.
I've been thinking about you guys all day.
Well, how about it, Ren? Have you done it yet?
Done what, Kelly?
Get married. Are we too late?
Nope. Stuart and I decided to get married at the stroke of midnight. Isn't that romantic?
Aww. Yeah, that's real cool. Let's go.
Dylan, I'm so glad you're here.
Well, I got you thinking about it, Bren. You're right. I have no right to tell you how to run your life. You're a smart young woman, and you'll do fine. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Nice stuff here. The whole cast, you're in the mix of this now.
What happened? Yeah.
What do you think about the others, Jenny and Tori, and being around them? What was it like for you? Was that an intimidating process? Were they all pretty cool? We hear a whole bunch of different versions of this.
It was intimidating. You know, I was older than them, and I had just come from, you know, I was in Florida. I went to, you know, University of South Florida, and I went into business and different things. I was taking acting at night and doing some theater. But I was, I think, when I came on that show, 27. At that time, maybe older or closer to 30 or 28, 29. But anyway, I was older than them. And I was from I wasn't in Hollywood or acting for, you know, most of my life. So I had a different, it wasn't intimidating. What intimidated me was the fact that I was in Hollywood and I was on a set in Hollywood. So it was kind of, and the fact that it was them, was, it wasn't really them that intimidated me, but the fact that they had the group that I was working with, the whole group, I remember being a little bit, you know, not nervous, but you know, the anticipation of doing these scenes with the entire cast. And I didn't really know them that well. Jenny was always very sweet to me. We talked a lot, but I didn't talk to the other cast members that much. I just didn't have the chance to, really. But I gotta tell you, that again lent to the character. He was an outsider.
Yeah.
And I was an outsider. And so it all just worked. You know, I just, that seemed like, in retrospect, the least contact I had, at least I tried to, you know, off the set, the better. Because yeah, my character on the show was kind of, they had a lot of aspects of what I was going through with being in Hollywood, with being on this show. And, you know, I do remember thinking, you know, this, I feel a little alone here, but that's cool. You know, yeah, I'm alone and this is my character and I'm alone. And I was just constantly rolling it all together and seeing what, you know, what, how much deeper I could go with it. So yep.
Now, I'm curious, even you were talking, David, about that feeling of being the intimidation. This Zach, did you ever have that coming onto a set with another group of actors? No, probably not our actors, because
you knew Brian.
You knew Brian. Yeah. But any other time in your career as an actor, obviously as a musician, you're pretty, that's how you make a living. You're pretty confident at that. But did that ever happen as an actor to you?
Being intimidated by being on
the set. Yeah, being like, in a set just, like that, or just to get, did Dave, I kept thinking to myself, is what David's saying right now, does that apply universally to actors, or, you know, is it different personalities? And I, you know, knowing you, I just wondered if you'd ever
had
any of those feelings before.
It's funny listening to David, because I share a lot of the same experiences that you did. I studied with Howard Fine as well. And,
oh, did you?
Yeah, so I was kind of fresh out of school. I was still studying while I was working. But I confess, I was intimidated at first. Even though I knew everybody, I was intimidated when I walked on the set of 90210, because now it's real, right. You know. And you see the peach pit, and here we are. It was a little scary, you know.
Right.
And then after I worked mostly with Brian, and I had known Brian from the year before from the Heights, and so we were really good friends. So the second we shot our first scene, and we shot it so fast, it all kind of went away, it was a lot of fun. But yeah, it could definitely be intimidating.
I remember being jealous of the show. I remember thinking, I want to do a show about music. I want to be a rock and roll guy.
It's so weird you say that, because I was jealous of your show because you were all playing lawyers and we're going, how do you talk? And I was like, they're so respectable and they're dressing nice. And
oh, that's so funny.
One of the other things that happens in this episode is this reverend who is just outrageous. But I'm going to show a clip of the reverend. But our friend Caitlin, you know, who does impressions of things on the show, she sent me this.
In a world of alienation and poverty and war and misery, perhaps we most truly reveal our belief in the possibilities when we make the commitment to share our lives forever. It is not a decision entered into lightly, for marriage is not to gamble across a sunlit meadow. Oh no, it's a long and arduous journey through a dark forest fraught with unseen dangers and sometimes disappointments. It is the ultimate testament of man's refusal to accept despair.
That's awesome.
I love her.
I was thinking we should have had the characters actually hire the guy, because it seems like it's intentional. You know, the guy's like totally, he's a buzzkill on the whole thing. Yeah. Would have been, we probably missed the one scene where they find the worst minister in Las Vegas.
Well, I don't know how that anywhere in my collection, but yes, it's just like funny. Let's go for the joke here. You know, what would be
that's
most
pure Jason, I think.
Is that
probably Jason? Theoretically, or we came up with it, but either way, it's sure fun.
I mean, the dialogue had to be from you guys, right?
So yeah, it was. Yeah,
but ultimately the words
could have been intentional, though. It just it's kind of random that the guys playing into their head.
If we did the plot point, but yeah, I just think I just used to think the whole thing of eloping to Vegas. I mean, I'm sure there are many couples had loped in Vegas and have been together for the 40 or 50 years, but it just always seemed to me it's such a temporary relationship. It just didn't seem real.
Well, so that's just with a stripper.
Of course, like my cousin.
You don't want us to get married.
Like
either.
Don Stroud, who I love.
Oh, thank God.
That's such a good moment.
All right, that's it. Stop the wedding. Stop the wedding.
Dad, what are you doing? Brenda, we are not going to let you go through with this.
We are stopping the wedding right here and right now.
Too late, guys. It's already been stopped.
Comedy take.
Good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. Keep your dignity, Jim. Keep your dignity. Yeah.
I don't know, Chuck. I think we did it better.
it was great.
That was great, though. I mean,
I have to see the pre-records.
Yeah, we didn't get to see that because we were having our technical problems.
But I'm curious, you know, obviously they weren't going to get married. I mean, I didn't know that when I was watching the show, you know, but now I know that because I've seen it all these times, right? But
it was a sweets episode, needless to say.
But
yes, we, in doing the research, we found out it was a five episode sweep, which is very unusual for the month of November. So we really rocked it with this plot, and you could we didn't have to wait to the 12th episode to take charge. We were good by like as soon as you really came on the scene.
Did we beat Melrose?
Yeah, and never looked back.
This was number 10 of the season.
Wow, this one was so I think about six. I think we hit it. Yeah.
Let's see. We have some questions here. Someone asks, "Hey, David, where do you, if say Stuart and Brenda did get hitched in Vegas, where do you think their characters would be today?" And so, and she said she loves you on Savannah.
Oh, where do I think they would be today? I don't know. Somewhere deep in the valley, nice house.
Where do you think Stuart is today?
He's probably still living at home.
Well, the person that Stuart is based on, the father went broke and he went in and out of rehab many times. So the joke's on Brenda, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Alicia wants to know if you're anything like Stuart, and is there any moment or scene that stuck out to you in shooting all of this?
I am like Stuart in some ways. I mean, you always bring quite a bit of yourself, I think, to every character. The moment when I say, "What are you doing for the rest of your life?" That moment and those words hit me were very romantic to me, and very they weren't cheesy at all to David, to me, and you know, that's how I felt in that moment, like, wow, you know, this is such a beautiful and big thing to ask someone, to say to someone, you know, and to say it sincerely, and it was cathartic in a way, in terms of like I could by really being there for that question, not just the words, but the act of saying, you know, I'm yours. Do you want to be mine? It was a really it was one of the more poignant moments in that whole arc.
No, most definitely. Yeah.
Our buddy Chris asks another weird one. You know, Chuck, you know, Chris, why did you make Brenda chicken salad with dark meat on the job site? She didn't seem to like it. Usually white meat is better. Do you guys know what he's talking about?
Yeah, Chris, you're wrong. Dark meat is much better. And show your face.
That is so funny. Yeah, the job site thing with the Murray, though, dressing you down, that's a really good scene. Like, again, that just showed, you know, where he was in the in the Beverly
Hills
world.
And that was a humiliation. If any of you have ever worked for, you know, I mean, the one time that Aaron did that to me in season one, it was like, don't ever do this again. It's really hits you when that happens. And every young guy who gets humiliated, that it's not uncommon. And I don't think so. I think
David played all of that so beautifully.
He did. He just let it, he understood the other guy, and he, you know, that's what I mean. The character was so genuine. It was hard not to like him. So Aaron eventually had to tell him, try to be unlikable. We got to make a turn to heel. Right, you know, babyface the heel.
Aaron, tough, you know, do you have any other things for David or about this sequence of the storyline?
I know last week there was talk of a young Dylan spinoff, and I just wanted to say, like, I'd love to hear more about Dylan's history with Stuart, you know, when he was working at Eve's Apple. And
Charlotte, are you listening? Charlotte, who pitched it?
Yeah, the young Dylan. That's great. Yeah, that was so much fun, the story slam.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that
soon. Hey, for Zach, this keeps coming up in the room here. Justina wants to know, and this is not the first time this has been asked, if Zach could sing, please, love his voice.
Wow. Right now, or
I think
so. Larry, I wanted you to announce it. You know, your club situation in Vegas. Larry's going to go see it. We're going out of town, so can't. But you know, pimp yourself now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I play bass guitar in a show here called Queens of Rock at the Mosaic on the Strip. If
featuring an incredibly talented singer named Elizabeth Diega. And it's a tribute to all the women of rock history.
Nice.
And I'm in the band.
Looking forward to it.
And we do it Thursday through Monday.
What are you doing now? You're doing some voiceover stuff you were talking about, right?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to act here, but I am involved with some people in the theater in Paris, and I'm doing the voiceovers. Yeah, for France TV, I work with them on documentaries. Like, you know, they'll have something on Van Gogh or Vincent Van Gogh or whatever, and they'll have a French journalist speaking about it, and I'll do his I'll dub him in English, and then I do you know, corporate stuff, and I also do some games,
nice video game stuff.
Yeah, and I'll do characters for those games.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Yeah.
So yeah, that and I'm working on some other stuff. I teach some people how to give presentations and stuff. But the point is that I have my son, you know, 2 Wednesdays a month and 2 weekends a month and half of the holidays, which are frequent here. And he lives 3 hours away. So I have to trek to go there for every weekend and every Wednesday just for the day. So my schedule is pretty rough in terms of logistics. And so I can't really, you know, I want to pursue some stuff in London or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah, that real life just happens.
Yep.
He's great. And Zach on the singing.
What does she want to hear?
Come on, Zach.
Keep
I want to hear it.
Well, give me a suggestion. Somebody,
you know, your favorite? Give me 3 steps from Leonard Skinner or something.
I knew it was going to be Leonard Skinner.
One of your favorite songs from the that one of the women sing in that she sings in the show.
I was cutting a rug at a place called The Mug.
Acapella.
Oh, get a good
time. Oh my gosh, really? Okay. They want me to sing, honey.
It's a little, something.
They want to see, honey.
Yeah.
Okay. They want to see you. The world is waiting for you. Okay. My girlfriend is getting an acoustic guitar out.
Excellent.
All right.
Great. All right. Here we go. This is great.
So I'm not promising you guys. I wish she told me what to. She's watching it in the other room. She goes, "I'll get you your guitar." My assistant. Thanks. You're kind of cool. Alrighty. Oh boy. Oh, this isn't intense. I just okay. Oh boy. So we just did a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song for something top secret, so weird. You might get copyrighted.
That's all right.
Oh yeah, we'll just do a couple of things. Yeah.
One morning I woke up and I knew you were gone. A new day, a new way, and new I sing a song. Go your way, I'll go mine.
Amazing, man. That was great.
I used to blast that on the 8-track, Zach.
Oh, yeah.
I used to sing along full blast. I could have sung with you on that one.
Well, you made Justina happen. Justina,
cool stuff.
Thank you, Justina, she's important for suggesting it.
Absolutely.
Oh, hey. Great. Excellent.
Very cool stuff. All right, this has been great. Wow. Listen, I just want to say, David, man, I can't say enough, and I said this to you before, but everybody wanted to talk to you because of what you did all those years ago. This character that you created, Stuart, it's just amazing work, man. And we all love you here. And I always try to speak for all the fans, but I know that they just continued asking about you and having you come on here because they just absolutely adore your work. And you brought something really, really special to 90210 in a time where
an important part of the show. I mean, we're really all grateful to it. Looking at it now, you know, we just didn't, you know, we should have been more like Aaron. Hey, lover, how you doing?
Save me. You saved me, man. Because that arc, once we were back on top, I had smooth sailing until for the next year and a half. So
wow,
we might come your way though in fall of 2022 when we do 90210 con Paris.
We're gonna do a 90210 convention.
No, I have to say thank you to you guys for what you wrote, produced, all the ideas, and that's really something I'm really grateful for. And to Pete and for inviting me on the show. And and anytime you want to do it again, I'm here.
Okay, awesome. That's cool. Great. Well, because there are other episodes we haven't talked about yet.
Great seeing you, David. Great
seeing you.
All right, guys. This
thank you, Zach.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Aaron,
take care, Zach. See you tomorrow.
Good to see you, Aaron. And as always, yes, I got to see Aaron in person a couple of weeks ago. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we hung out.
We had a blast.
Nice.
All right, guys. This has been great. We will see you next time. Thank you again, David. Thank you, Zach. All right.
Thank you, guys. Bye. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
See you.